So welcome. Welcome to the Joy Factory, where we explore the art of happiness at work. I'm Susan DeFazio, your host and founder of Be Future Ready Today, where we develop toolkits that simplify our world of work and empower the how for happier and healthier outcomes so people and businesses can truly thrive. Our podcast guests come from all walks of life, and today we're delighted to welcome Dr. Claire Mulligan Foster. Welcome, Claire.
Thanks, Susan. Great to be here. Thank you for the invite.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome. I'm sure we're going to have a really rich conversation. But for everybody listening, just a little bit about Claire. Claire is a chartered psychologist and is passionate about using the science of psychology to help people and organizations understand how to reach their goals. Claire specializes in diversity and inclusion, neuroscience at work, and how this impacts our decision-making, work relationships, and leadership behaviors, which is terrific because on this episode, The Pursuit of Happiness at Work, we'll explore what happiness means to different people and how we integrate happiness into our work life and whether we can be truly happy with our work and satisfied with our life if we're not happy at work. But first, I'd like to start our conversation by asking Claire more on a personal level. What does joy mean to you, Claire?
Thanks, Susan. So joy to me, I think it's really interesting to sort of reflect on what that means for me now, because I think it's changed so much over my life, and especially over the last few years as we're post-pandemic. And I think, you know, joy, you know, what it means, what makes me feel contentment, what makes me feel happiness has shifted. And for me, like, I think it's quite simple things now. You know, I'm a real home bird. I love being at home with my husband and our cats. I love gardening. And you know, those sort of just that contentment of, I think it's just that feeling of safety and enjoying making our home a nice place. I do love time with family and friends. I think that's obviously what I think a lot of people will say. I'm from a big family and there's lots of us, and it's always great fun when we're together and seeing what everyone is up to. And I'm lucky to have really good friends. And although, you know, I don't feel I see them as much as I used to, as life has changed. But when we get together, there's sort of real happiness there, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting you say about the simple things and about this re-evaluation with you know, the post-pandemic and so on and what we've all been through. But I agree with you. For me, it is increasingly more the simple things, like I'm a bit of a homebody too, but things like, you know, new sheets on bed, you know, getting into a nicely new bed is lovely, you know, gardening, cooking, all of those things.
Yeah.
So I think, but when you, it's one of those questions I find when I ask guests that it's a bit of a, gosh, what does make me, you know, what does bring me joy? And is it usually tends to be the simple things. So, which is quite, you know, this is why we want to really explore, because we spend so much time at work, how does joy and happiness translate into the workplace? So, you know, from your experience, Claire, what's your thoughts on, you know, the subject of happiness in the workplace? I'm sure you're dealing with this day in and day out.
Absolutely. I do a lot of coaching with people, and you know, often it comes up that people don't feel happy and they don't feel happy with work, and we do explore it. I think it's an interesting concept. I'm trying to think about giving my age away, but I'll say it. It's okay. I'm 50, just turned 50. And I remember when I started work in the sort of 80s and 90s, the concept of are you happy at work was not a question that was often asked.
Yeah.
It was, you know, success was really, you know, how are you doing? You know, where are you working? What level are you at? How much are you earning even?
Yes.
And it wasn't really something we considered. And that was because I don't think we really had the tools or we really had the awareness. There was some talk about engagement at work, but in my field, in the sort of occupational psychology field, the concept of really thinking about happiness at work really has been about, you know, it's about 25 years now, I'd say, we've been thinking about it. And it was, there was a shift in thinking. There was a movement called positive psychology, which I'm sure you've come across in your own work. And that was... come out. Martin Seligman was president of APA, the American Psychology Association, and he did a talk, released a paper about positive psychology, saying that psychology should really focus on not just solving problems and challenges, but how can we make, you know, help people live their optimal life. And that was the real birth of positive psychology. So since then, there's been so much research and so much thinking about, well, actually, how can we help people, as well as think about their lives, how can we think about, you know, applying this to work? How can we think about what makes people happy with work? And so nowadays, when we talk to people about work, we often say, do you enjoy what you do? Do you love what you do?
Yeah.
Are you going to stay there? Well, are you happy there? Well, if not, maybe you should think about doing something different, or you should think about the way you work. So now it's a real reason.
It's shifted, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's how people reflect on their work and think, well, am I happy here?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen this again, a real shift over the last few years where people have started to think about, you know, well, am I happy? You know, we've been through a tough time. We're still in a tough time with the way the world is. And people are starting to reflect a little bit more, I think, and had a bit of space with the pandemic to maybe think about it. And it was tough for so many people, but there's a lot of people did consider how they wanted to live their life.
You're right, actually, because if I think about it, it's a generational shift. I mean, there's this movement into being happier at work. I think the generation perhaps before us, and perhaps part of our working life, Claire, was all there wasn't you went to work to do a job, to be productive. You got paid for that, and you sort of went home. Yes, you found satisfaction, I suppose that would, but it's happiness and engagement has become much more of a I say a new trend, but as you say, in the last sort of 20 years or so. So generationally, there's been a big shift, hasn't there?
Absolutely. And I think a shift in how we determine what success is.
Yeah.
If we think maybe back a few decades, you know, success was maybe the corner office, the you know, the fancy car, the, you know, what salary. You know, success, you know, is still important in those ways, you know, obviously monetary return, things like that. But success is also now, do you feel fulfilled? Do you feel your work gives you meaning? Do you feel content, happy? And people are searching for that. And, you know, we talked about this, the title of this, The Pursuit of Happiness. You know, people are searching for happiness. And I pause before I say happiness, because what does happiness mean?
Yes.
You know, and it's that concept of what does happiness mean? And it's very subjective. So you ask me what brought me joy, what makes me happy would not be what made me happy maybe 20 years ago, but also would not be what other people find happiness in.
Yes.
And I think it's so subjective what it means. And it's, you know, it's not a permanent feeling. It's something that, you know, we search for. We try and reflect on what brings us happiness. So it's different for everyone. And that makes it really hard to sort of provide a clear meaning. And that's been part of the challenge, I think, in my own field about what does happiness mean.
And how do you then, when you're coaching, Claire, and you know, whether, how do you delve into this sort of aspect of finding fulfillment at work? Maybe we don't talk about happiness, but fulfillment. But how do you sort of go about peeling back the layers of the onion, as it were?
Absolutely. Yeah. So There's a few ways we do it. First of all, we discuss that, you know, what does it mean to you, that concept of mm-hmm. happiness? But we talk about more terms of sort of well-being or flourishing or, you know, thriving, or what does success mean? We use those sort of terms. And, you know, when people say, you know, I just don't feel happy, it's understanding what does that mean to them. And that's really yes. important, that perception of what does it mean to that person. And it's, you know, my perception is not going to be the same as theirs. And then we sort of explore what it means. Like, what are those moments, or what are those sort of markers that they perceive as happiness? Because the pursuit of happiness is the challenge. You know, we have, you know, we often think, oh, when I, you know, when I reach this level, I'll be happy. Or, you know, when yeah, I lose yeah. some weight, I'll be happy. When I yes. can buy this, I'll be happy. When I get to Friday, I'll be happy. Whatever it means. And that sort of pursuit of happiness, it's, you know, do we ever reach that moment of happiness? And that can cause some challenges, because people think, well, I'll be happy when this happens. And then they reach there and they don't really feel happy, or they don't, it doesn't mean as much as what they thought, because the pursuit of happiness is always a pursuit. It's always that thinking about what's next, what is it I want to achieve? What do I want to do? And so the pursuit of happiness is a challenge in itself, because we start to think, well, actually, rather than focusing on what I want to achieve, like, where are the moments of happiness?
Yes.
And there's research that shows that rather than think about, you know, these big significant milestones in life, actually it can be a lot of small wins. It's a lot of daily activities. It's a lot of, where are the moments of happiness?
Yes.
So often, and you know, people, you know, what do they mean by happiness? We often explore, because people think, well, when I think of happiness, I think of joy, which is the word you use there, or I think of mm-hmm. smiley people. I think of, you know, feeling this sort of ecstatic moment. And happiness really isn't about that. Happiness is like a contentment. Yes. It's a feeling of well-being. It's yeah. a feeling of being able to manage your life with contentment. And that's, I think it's about being authentic.
Do you think as individuals, Claire, that we tend to think personally what, you know, about happiness, what makes us happy, but do you think that as individuals we consciously think about what is contentment at work? Because, you know, you're right in that you can't be at this elevated state of happiness, you know, 24/7. It's unrealistic. Mm. But though it's those moments of contentment, the moments that I would say, you know, where you feel calm, where you feel at one with the world, as it were, whether it's, you know, working with your boss, with your co-workers on a team project. I mean, but do you think that we, or, you know, individuals think enough about what brings them contentment and happiness in their work life?
I don't think individuals think about it enough in life in general. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone does that deliberately. A lot of people I work with, and just people in my own life, that we're busy. We're yeah. very good at being busy. We're answering those, you know, emails coming in. We're ticking off the to-do list. We're getting through the day. We're getting through what we have to do. We're juggling a lot. And I, in my experience, not a lot of people give themselves time to do a little bit of reflection on knowing themselves, mm-hmm. reflecting on actually what is it that I have enjoyed about today? What have I done well? What actually hasn't gone well, and how can I learn from that? And I'm a big believer and supporter and encourager of reflective practice. And it sounds a bit challenging to people, because people think, oh, it's about journaling, it's about meditation, and all those things are amazing. But sometimes it's just giving yourself a bit of space in the day yeah. to reflect on and get to know yourself. It's so powerful, because knowing yourself, and it's about the neuroscience of feeding our brains about what it is that does make us feel happy, feel content. So our brain is amazing. It's full of all this information. We've fed it throughout our life. And we have all these sort of shortcuts of little neural pathways of things that we associate. So we might think, you know, well, oh, I'm going to this place again. I really enjoyed it last time. It's a positive memory.
Yeah.
So and that's something, you know, we can associate with. But sometimes we've got to reflect on those sort of associations we have in our brain, because our brain will have associations that are like positive or negative. We call it sort of threats and rewards.
Right.
Or we don't. The sort of neuroscientists do. And I think it's understanding, you know, how do we understand what can be more of a reward? Because when we see something as a reward, our brain is going to release sort of dopamine, which is that sort of positive hormone, which is going mm-hmm. to make us feel good. It's going to make us, you know, feel that getting that reward. We're going to, our mind is then a bit more, it's a bit calmer, our mind. So it's a bit more open. It can see the bigger picture. It can be more creative. It can be a bit more empathetic. When we see something as a threat, when it's something we're not sure about, something that feels stressful, and a threat can be that email coming from the boss to say, have you got 5 minutes? And our brain goes,
yes.
Oh my God, what's happening?
What have I done?
Yes. We go immediately to that threat. So we get the stress hormone, cortisol, which is then it limits our brain, because then it's the stress hormone is sort of, it's causing a bit of anxiety in our body, and it doesn't allow our brain to have that cognitive energy to then think, well, you know, what could this really mean? And, you know, what else is going on? What's the bigger picture? What's the perspective? And you'll reflect on that yourself. If we have a problem, we focus on it. It's very hard to see a bigger picture when we're focused on a problem. And yes. It's a term of focalism. So it's, you know, the way of reframing those neural pathways is through reflective work. And it's like reframing to think, actually, that phone call from my boss for 5 minutes, it was actually really positive. So next time I get that email, maybe it won't trigger a stress in me. Do you know? And I start to feel calmer. And it's sometimes it's about reframing. Sometimes it's about knowing what triggers us and learning about ourselves. And it's recognizing how your brain works. So you can start to think, you know, I can start to learn from even the challenges in life and start to think, well, actually, how did I come through it?
It's interesting you say this, because as we're talking, it brings up, you know, I'm thinking about, I'm a big reflector generally, but if I think about the reframing aspect, my sort of personal experience is that for me, I kind of like to be quite prepared for things, you know, sort of, yeah. I really, I prepare well, I think things through, I take pride in what I'm doing. And so if anything moves out of that sort of comfort zone, it can feel a little bit threatening, and not so much, not now, I've reframed. And the way I had a boss that used to say to me, you know, we've got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I thought, oh, that's just, that sounds like hell on earth to me, you know. But actually now I reframe it. And whenever I feel that trigger of thinking, oh my goodness, I'm faced with something I've not done before, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to respond, I sort of take a breath and think, okay, what am I going to learn? And I just kind of, I'm a bit kinder to myself. And that's my example of reframing. And now, actually, I would say that whenever something comes up and it takes me out of my comfort zone, as long as it's not, you know, incredibly threatening, I think, okay, let's roll with this. And it's much easier on your, I don't know, on your just your sense of equilibrium.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. Such a great explanation. And that's how we learn about all the emotions that we're feeling, and how the ones that feel a bit negative then don't overwhelm. Mm-hmm. So there's a contentment, there's a feeling of satisfaction, achievement that we get from sort of reframing to things. So maybe like you've got to do a presentation and it's something you think, oh, that's so stressful. Your brain is telling you this is stressful. You've got the cortisol hormone, you know, and it's about taking that breath, taking that moment, which is really part of emotional intelligence, is to recognize that this is feeling stressful and telling your body, study that, you know, giving yourself a breath, that it doesn't have to feel stressful. Mm-hmm. And then thinking about, well, what skills do I have? How can I do this? And then reflecting, well, how did it go? So next time you have a presentation, it doesn't create that stress.
Yes.
And we feel confident thinking, I've overcome that, I've achieved it. So we can turn something that feels quite stressful by reframing it into something that feels like we've achieved something. So the happiness, the sort of well-being aspect of, I suppose, when we think about what makes us feel good at work, is embracing all the emotions, is embracing it all and learning from it and building it and knowing yourself that we can manage it. And this makes us, this helps us feel more confident, more resilient, more optimistic, because we're managing it. And so it feels a bit against the grain when we talk about, well, what makes us happy, to actually think, well, actually, we need to overcome all the emotions. We need to think about that contentment and well-being aspect of it that we can manage. And when, and if we can't, when do we reach for help? When do we get support? And so it's knowing yourself really well.
You said something, you know, knowing yourself really well, but it takes me back to something you said earlier, Claire. And that was, you know, you said about yourself personally, you know, you're what makes you content now may have been different a few years ago and a few years before that. And I think it just, you know, I remember back at school, you had, you know, your career service, you had your careers counselor and so on. But after you leave school and you maybe go through university or whatever, or even if you don't go to university, there's not that sort of, systemic ritual of almost doing a stock take of what personally, you know, people tend to think about, oh, January and it's new resolutions and so on. But is it that? Is it not setting aside some time to say, okay, even if I am in a job where I really feel really happy, let's just talk, you know, take stock. Does it align with my values? Is it going to align with how I see my life changing? And having that, I suppose you can either do it yourself, that kind of be self-paced, or, you know, go work with a coach like yourself. But in my experience, people don't do that often enough. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. And something you said there about, does it align with my values? Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely critical. And our core values should remain quite stable through our life, you know, like things like family values, you know, so your views on the world, but your work values will change.
Yeah.
And so it's assessing your work values is a great way to do this, because if you look at what's important to you, and what's success to you, what's, you know, your financial ambitions, what's your, you know, do you want to work in a team? Do you want to work individually? Do you want to be creative? Do you want, you know, all these things we look at, they'll shift. And I think recognizing that can realize, well, I've loved my job for 20 years, but why am I not loving it now?
Yeah.
And it could be because your values have shifted. And, my own doctorate research was looking at why people over 50 change their career from a occupational role, from an organisation role, to a different career, contemporary career. And for a lot of people, it was recognising that, you know, their views of the world have changed, their views of their own career. They wanted more meaning. They wanted more management of their own time. They wanted the flexibility. They wanted more freedom. And that's at a time of life where maybe their life circumstances are different. You know, maybe families have left home. Maybe they're in a different position financially, that they're allowed that choice that maybe you couldn't do in your 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a lot of people, it was just wanted something that had more meaning to them. And that was because their values had changed and they wanted something different. Whereas some people, you know, the success to them or their values is about achieving, you know, a high profile, is getting that promotion. And that's going to be important to them. So understand your values is core to knowing yourself and understanding why maybe you're not feeling as engaged at work or why you're not feeling as connected. Now, what we can do, we don't all have to change careers completely, but we can craft our careers that are more in line with our values. So even if you were working, you know, if you were working in retail and one of your values was, you know, helping people, mm-hmm. then maybe you could craft your role to do more of where you were helping customers, where you were more in that customer service, maybe more where you were mentoring colleagues or training colleagues.
Yes.
So you can start to craft.
Shift.
Yeah. So there's lots of theories on crafting your career to help support how to think to do that.
Yeah.
I think there's another point that not everyone's work is going to make them happy. And I think for some people, work isn't the most important thing in their life. Maybe they have other responsibilities or other, you know, passions and hobbies or care responsibilities. And for some people, you know, they just want to do their job and go home. And that's okay. We don't all have to think, you know, is work making me happy? Because that can be quite stressful for people.
Yes.
Thinking, well, everyone's talking about this and I don't feel that. And I don't really.
But we're all different. We're all different, aren't we? And we've all got different sort of there's responsibilities in life, whether it's to families or friends or whatever it is, or you know, society in at large. We've all got things that we want to do. So to your point about, you know, people are not all people are necessarily looking for happiness at work. They're looking to be able to go in and thrive in an environment where they can go in, do the job they've been paid to do, and go home without undue levels of stress. I think that's the important thing there. You know, it's not about doing backflips down, you know, if you're sitting on a supermarket checkout, for instance, it's not about doing backflips down to where you sit on the till. It is about just knowing that you like the brand that you work for. Your colleagues are friendly and supportive, and those kind of things. That's important, I think.
Absolutely, and it may be that role gives you the perfect work-life balance, and that you know, you get to walk your dog every day, whatever it is that you want to do. I mean, I'm laughing at that one because that would come up so much in my own research, that people just wanted time to walk their dog every day. So it's quite simple pleasures, you know? Or people just wanted time to, you know, do something else. So sometimes it's understanding what it is that you want. I always used to go mad at the pictures of the happiness at work. You know, when they used to do pictures in organizations of like everyone was jumping for joy.
Yes.
I've never done that in my work. I don't know any organization that have all jumped up together. And that's the image we have, thinking, well, if I'm happy in my work, I need to be doing the backflips. I need to be doing the
high fives, all that sort of stuff. And culturally, that doesn't necessarily, and you know, it's different for different cultures how you show joy. I mean, you know, I've worked a lot in North America, and they're much more, tend to be much more sort of effervescent about, you know, yay and high five and, you know, just sort of louder and bigger and so on. That's not necessarily my style. I was able to thrive in it because I appreciated that was their environment and so on, and I was happy with what I was doing. But going back to something earlier about, we talked about, you know, sort of this kind of taking stock and reassessing. Do you think when, you know, you talked about that sort of over 50, your doctorate and so on, but do you think that people tend to make assessments when things are seemingly going bad for them? Because I believe when things that happen to us can often create some of the biggest opportunities for us, but it doesn't maybe feel like that at this time. But do you think that perhaps the way our brain is, that sort of cortisol-inducing chemical that floods us, if we're, say, so I'll give you an example. So if we're made redundant, for instance, or we're just not happy with our boss or our line manager, whatever it is, there tends to be times of crisis that push us into this reevaluation. Do you think that can kind of cloud how we reevaluate, or what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so absolutely. I think it depends whether you feel you are in control of it or not. So there's a push or sort of pull when we make change at work. So a push could be like the redundancy, which can be very stressful and feel out of control. And that's also a challenge if we put too much like faith in the work making us happy. So if the job goes, that can be so scary for people. And especially if part of your core identity is what you do and you're so associated with the company. So that push can feel very, very stressful. But yeah, it's how we cope with that and how we, you know, what support we get and how confident we feel, how optimistic we feel about change. So there's a lot of points to that. The sort of the decision for someone to leave. So say maybe there's been a change in the structure or there's a new boss and you just think, I can't do this anymore. You know, this is the straw that broke the camel's back, as it's the saying is. And you feel it's time for me to make a change. Then that's a very different sort of mindset, and you feeling more empowered by that, and maybe there was some ideas bubbling that, you know, that you've been thinking about, and so it depends on your association with the organization whether it's your decision or not. And we see that sort of, you know, that push or pull. Also, often we find people make a change as well if there's a big change in their own life,
right? Okay.
So
like health or relocating, something like that.
Yeah. And that's what we saw in the pandemic. There was a big shift to people's lives and a lot of people were looking at doing different work, and the intention to leave numbers, the research that was done was really high, you know, around the pandemic, because people were thinking things have changed so much, I can make other change. So sometimes that change was, even though it's such a negative experience, can be quite empowering to think I can cope with change. There's a lot there about what causes us to change. But I think, you know, going back, if we can, to the pursuit of happiness, and I think how do we think about that happiness? Because it's not all about having to make big changes. And that's part of my fear of that we think of, I'll be happy when. Yeah. And it's not, the research tells us, it's not my belief, it's not my experience, that happiness isn't about that sort of chasing something. Yeah. It's, you know, it's knowing yourself, it's engaging with daily investment into what makes you happiness. It's, you know, the research shows us that frequency of positive experience. So, you know, thinking about that daily experience of life and those, where those pleasures, where those contentments are, can be more powerful than those, well, when this happens, when those big intensive. And that is that reflective practice. And it, as I said, it doesn't have to be, you know, too out there. I worry a bit about the law of attraction, which I think is coming out in the way I'm speaking there, that people think, I'll put it out there and the universe will respond. And the science behind that is that you're feeding your brain with that awareness. You're going to look out for opportunities, consciously or unconsciously. So you are feeding your brain and it can work, but that's not the only way to do that. You know, one of the most powerful things you can do is gratitude.
Yes, yes.
And it's so simple and it's so easy and it's such a mind shift for people. And gratitude is about noting on a daily basis, if you can, and for anyone listening, recommend doing this, trying it out for 2 or 3 weeks, see how you feel. You have to write it down, but whether it's on your phone or a piece of paper, but you have to, sort of physical entry is more powerful. And 3 things you're grateful for. So it could be, now I'm sat here in my office, I'm looking out, I'm in the loft, so I've got a view over and I can see all the lovely colours of autumn as we're recording this. It's just the end of autumn, early winter going on. And I'm grateful that, because I love gardening, I can see everyone's gardens and I can see all the colours. So that would be something I'm grateful for, that I can see that, I can experience it. I'm grateful for this opportunity. This is exciting to record a podcast. You know, I'm grateful that our house is warm in this cost of living crisis. You know, so it doesn't have to be huge. It can be whatever. But what it does to your brain, the neuroscience of it, is that we start looking for things to be positive about. So maybe tomorrow when I come to do it again, I'm thinking, oh, I haven't thought about what I'm grateful for. Let me look around. Let me think about that.
Let me think about it.
So I'm giving myself a moment to reflect and think, what am I grateful for? And I'm starting to feed that into my brain. So my brain is my library. My brain has been added with these things I feel grateful for. As I do it and as I look over what I've written down, I start to see trends. And I think, yes, you know what? And that's part of what I know about myself, that garden, the outside bit. I notice I write that a lot when I talk about my gratitude. I love looking at people's flowers and the gardens, you know, things. So I recognize that's something I need to feed into my life. Yeah. I need time for gardening because that makes me feel good.
That makes you feel good. And the thing is, I mean, you know, that if you do that then, Claire, what you've got is when you come to that more sort of the reflective practice of what are your, you know, what are your work values? Have they changed in the last 6 months or however, you know, the intervals when you want to sort of do that kind of stock check, as it were, you can start to look at the things that make you feel good, because, you know, for some people it could be the excitement of traveling to meetings. You know, I remember when I first started traveling internationally, I felt, wow, it was amazing. And it is amazing. The more you do it, the less amazing it seems to absolutely become. But that's just life, isn't it? You change. Yeah. But you know, do you think the other thing about that gratefulness, I mean, you're making me smile, because this morning I've been keeping the heating down because of the energy cost and so on and so forth. But I got into a really nice hot shower this morning and I thought, wow, this is amazing.
I know.
It was a hot shower, you know, and the things that you can kind of take for granted if you just, you know, you turn on the, there were times when, and still are, where that's not available to people. So I know what you mean about that gratitude thing. But the question around, I've got a question around support network.
Yeah.
Do you think it's important to pick wisely who supports you on your work life journey in terms of being able to talk things through, you know, or do you think it's better to have, you know, a designated coach that sort of helps you through life? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so absolutely. Having positive relationships is going to help us with our well-being. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's so much research about, you know, how we need that social interaction. And at all stages of life, for different reasons, we even see it in later life, it helps people, you know, with their well-being. In work, we spend so much time with people we work with. So it's important to build those relationships. And a lot of what causes people stress at work is negative relationships, you know. Yeah. And so, but having your support network, it's important, people that you trust, to think about a bit of diversity. We don't want that group think. We don't want everyone who thinks like us, which can happen in our immediate circles. But yeah, have mentors, people who support you. Coaches can be great. Obviously, a little biased with that one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we think, you know, people should have mentors. They should have people who sponsor them. They should have people who, you know, someone they can trust, they can talk to, who will give them feedback that is constructive.
But yes,
it's coming from a kind place. It's coming from a place of wanting someone to improve, because we should be able to take feedback or feed forward, as it is now, how we build ourselves going forward. But yeah, and build those relationships, build that affinity. It's core how we work now. We want people to feel included. We want people, you know, to feel they feel safe in the workplace. And that's about positive relationships. So build those, you know, try and reach out to people, compliment people, build people up. Giving someone a compliment, it can be so powerful for your own well-being as well as the other person's.
Yeah.
You know, because again, you're seeing that positive in other people. And, you know, all these things are important, what we do for ourselves, but you can apply them to work. You know, even yes. I was saying about the gratitude, you can think about what are you grateful in terms of your work? And as you were saying, well, it helps you understand what do you enjoy? Yes. And it helps you understand. There's a great model, which, you know, I think I'm touching on so much that I need to sort of reference, which is Martin Seligman again, which is sort of considered the sort of king of, or the leader in positive psychology, come up with a model about well-being. Mm-hmm. And he challenges the concept of happiness. And he talks, it's actually about well-being. It's about flourishing. And he has a model called PERMA. So it's P is for positive emotion, which is what we've been talking about in terms of gratitude is one of the keys for doing that. Mm-hmm. About engagement, which is about feeling engaged with your work. So the concept of flow. So something, we want something that feels a bit challenging, but not too challenging, it's stressful. We want to feel like we're growing. So again, where are you feeling flow at work? So this model is really nice for people to take something to think, I can use some of this. You don't have to use all of it. You can think, which one should I work on? So this is where, like, even crafting your career comes in with that engagement piece.
Okay.
The other one you talked about, which is the R, was about relationships, which is what you just asked about. Mm-hmm. That we do need positive relationships to help with well-being. And the other thing, again, you've touched on all these, Susan. So meaning, so what's our values, what's mm-hmm. important to us, and that's subjective to each of us. Mm-hmm. And then the A is about accomplishment. So
right.
What's gone well for us? So even at the end of the week or the end of the working day, just think, what did I do well? You won't do everything perfectly at work, but what did you do well? Or even those things that didn't go as well, what would you do next time? And again, we're feeding our brain to feel optimistic about even the things that are not feeling as, you know, well, actually, I need to do a bit better about.
I think that is brilliant, actually, because it's so simple. You could almost have that on your desk or in a pocket card just as a reminder, just to, you know, if you're traveling on the tube to work or bus or walking or whatever, you can start to think about each of these elements, and that in of itself gives you that framework for reflective practice, doesn't it?
100%. Exactly. That's what it can be used for. You could use this as a guide for your reflective practice each week, thinking, all right, so each of these, the PERMA, you know, let me spend a minute or two on each of them. You can start helping yourself. It's been developed since this, that there actually should be a H on the end for health, and about nutrition, exercise, sleep. And we know we need all that for obviously our physical well-being, our mental health, but for our cognitive health.
Right.
So if we're tired or stressed, it's very hard to be reflective.
Yes.
Because we just can't think that bigger picture. We can't be as optimistic. Okay. So you need that sort of cognitive energy. So this is not something to, when you do reflective practice, it's not something just to add on the end of your to-do list.
No.
It's when you can, you know, when you can sit down. So I tend to do mine at the weekend, where I've got, like, I can spend a little bit of a time, I can make a cup of tea, I can sit down, I can just think about it. And it's just, you know, often people say, oh, I've got to fit this in now, and it shouldn't feel a stress.
No, it shouldn't feel.
Yeah. So the cognitive energy is important. If you're stressed, tired, hungry, all those things, you won't have the cognitive energy to really think about yourself, and with optimism and curiosity and all the things that we know happen when we're in a stronger sort of cognitive energy space. So even if it's, I know people do it while they're out for a walk, or as you said, in the shower, or when driving, things that, you know, when you've got a little bit of space.
Yeah, it's you're right about, because I, you know, in my work, there's a creative aspect to it, because we're designing toolkits that simplify complex problems in our world of work. And so you're dealing with really serious sort of subjects like trust or your happiness or whatever it is. But actually, as engaging as I find these, there have been times when we've been developing the toolkits where I think, I just can't do it today. I just don't have it in me. And you have to, I do something else. You know, I do something that's more sort of routine rather than that creative. So I think you're absolutely right. It's, for me, it would be sitting down at the weekend, making myself a nice cup of coffee and maybe having a biscuit and just with pen and paper doodling and see where that takes me, you know, or if you're reading a book and something triggers your imagination, I don't know, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, and everyone's reflective practice will be different, you know. Some, like you're saying, you're doodling, some people will be quite creative with it. Some people, you know, might just want to write it down. Some people may just want to think about it. And even, you know, maybe if they want to record it, talking to their phone, some people may want to meditate or journal or free write, whatever. So it's what works for you. And there's so much guidance out there. It can be a bit overwhelming. And I think that's what I wanted to sort of really communicate about this. This doesn't have to feel overwhelming. It doesn't have to feel I need to get up at 5 a.m. and I need to write, I need to, you know, do all these things. It doesn't have to be that. That is brilliant if that works for you, but your reflective time is what suits you.
And absolutely. Well, you know, Claire, I think this has been I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I hope you have too.
I have. It's been lovely just to chat to you.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously we'd love to have you on another time and chat more, because this is just an exhaustive subject, don't you think?
It is. And I think some people are, you know, we've talked quite broadly about it. Maybe some people just want, well, tell me what to do. You know, what's the practical things? And you know, or if I'm a leader, how do I support my teams? So there's so much to this, but it was, it was great to.
It's really good. I mean, you know, if I do a little recap, if you like, I think it's the importance of what I've heard you say. It's the importance of reflecting, creating that space to reflect, being really clear on what your work values are and how they integrate with your life values. And then thinking about proactively crafting a career that kind of gives you that encouragement and that contentment, as it were. So, we've covered a lot. I'll do some show notes and put them out with the summary of the podcast so everybody can reflect. But if people want to get in touch with you, Claire, how do they do that? Is it best on LinkedIn?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is probably the best. So it's, you know, Claire Mulligan Foster. I'm on LinkedIn. I have a website. It's CMCBP, which is hard for everyone to remember. So yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best.
Okay, cool. Well, that's great. Well, listen, thank you very, very much. I look forward to getting this podcast out and letting the world hear what we've talked about. I hope they've found it as interesting and as fascinating as I have, and I think you have too.
Definitely. And you know, I appreciate you being invited, and well done for creating this space for us to talk. Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome. You're absolutely welcome. Thank you, Claire. Please join us on our next episode of The Joy Factory, when I'll be chatting to our next guest and discovering their thoughts about how we connect and create happiness for ourselves and others.